Welcome to the Ultimate Soulmate Summit, brought to you by The Soulmate Secret and the Calling in the One online course with your hosts, Arielle Ford and Claire Zammit. Today's Soulmate Seminar is with Dr. John Gray on the topic Mars and Venus on a Date, how to navigate the five stages of dating to create a loving, lasting relationship with your soulmate. Dr. John Gray is the leading relationship expert in the world and best-selling relationship author of all time. His 17 books have sold over 50 million copies and been printed in 50 different languages. Beginning in 1992 with his groundbreaking book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, John launched a Mars-Venus book series that forever changed the way men and women view their relationships. His many books, videos, workshops, and seminars provide simple, practical insights to effectively manage stress and improve relationships at all stages and ages of life and love.
Welcome to the Ultimate Soulmate Summit.
Well, thank you. I'm very honored to be a part of this incredible lineup of speakers that you have.
Oh, thanks, John. And we want to jump into Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus for a quick refresher course, because I'm assuming there are some younger folks on this line that may not have read the book yet, or older folks like me who read the book and have forgotten some of it. So could you just give us the basics?
I can, but first of all, Arielle, I want to just say how much I enjoyed reading your book.
Oh, thank you.
It's an incredible book. People are very fortunate to get that information. I loved it very much.
I'm honored. I'm really honored.
When it comes to Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, it's like we're from different planets. And it's a fun way of looking at our differences. Certainly when you look at men and women, there's a male and a female inside of both of us. If we look at the yin and the yang, the opposite polarities, the part of us which is receptive, the part of us which is more wanting to reach out and make a difference in the world. What's exciting for me is now I explain a lot of the terms that I talked about in Men Are From Mars, actually in terms of our hormonal differences. If you look at the high estrogen levels in women, estrogen is a hormone that makes us receptive and makes us feel our inner dependence on others. Testosterone, and men have 30 times more testosterone than women. Testosterone makes us feel independent, wanting to do things on our own, to be separate, to be alone. I can do it myself, that kind of a thing. And certainly no man is an island, but often we think we are. And when you look at these differences, you see common patterns in men and women. And often the things you see in men, that men do when they're, we'll put it in the range of healthy, ordinary men. There's always dysfunction and to different degrees in different levels of society and so forth. But we're looking at your general healthy male, the one you want to be involved with, a general healthy woman who's mature enough, capable enough to have a relationship. So this is what we're talking about. Many of the behaviors that are natural to men, if women have them, it's usually a sign of dysfunction. And behaviors that are natural to women, if men have them, it's a sign of dysfunction, vice versa. So let me give you an example of that. The hormone testosterone makes men want to interact with women, make a difference, say, look what I can do, see how I can do this, I can make you happy. And ultimately, in the dating process, women, you want to give men a chance to do things for you, because that's how men bond. If a man feels successful in doing something or pleasing you or making you feel happy, he bonds with you more. As men bond, that increases a hormone called oxytocin. Now, oxytocin is a hormone that's very, very important to women. It lowers women's stress levels, but it doesn't lower a man's stress levels. It actually has the effect of lowering his testosterone, which can raise his stress level. So too much bonding causes men to start feeling uncomfortable. That's often where you're in a relationship and you feel kind of suffocated. Well, that's the stress level going up from too much closeness. Now, this too much closeness happens much sooner for men than for women. What happens is as men get closer, things are going well, the oxytocin levels go up, they start bonding. Then men will tend to want to pull away in order to rebuild their testosterone levels. And at that point creates a lot of confusion for women, where they often will say things like, why are you pulling away? Why didn't you call? What's going on? You know, and that's not the time to ask him these things when he's pulling away. But when he pulls away, his testosterone levels come back up and he feels his interest again to want to connect. That's the best a man can be, is when his testosterone levels are normal. When they start dropping, that's when they get kind of moody and sulky, they lose their motivation and so forth. This is the opposite of the common knowledge about testosterone. It's only been discovered scientifically in the last few years that testosterone is not the hormone of aggression. Actually, men are most romantic when their testosterone levels are high. And by high, I mean normal, normal testosterone levels for a man. So this is like one example of men are from Mars, women are from Venus, is that men have basically different tendencies. They feel loved. You know, we all want love. But the way a man feels loved is generally how a woman responds to what he does. If she seems to be happy and delighted with what he does, that makes him feel more loved than, say, he was feeling sick and you sent him little cards and said, I love you, here, let me make you some soup and whatever. That's all nice. Those are nice, comforting things. But what makes men feel bonded and feel loved the most is when they feel successful in fulfilling a woman. Or in their job, when they're successful making money or whatever they're doing, making a difference in the world. Now, certainly women love to make a difference, but it doesn't necessarily lower her stress level. What lowers women's stress level, makes them feel most loved, is going to be intimacy, where you see into her. So for a man, is to know who a woman is and show caring, to understand where she's coming from. These are demonstrations of love that make the biggest difference for her. Often in Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, the book, I talked about how men don't understand this, but it's the little things, consistent little things that win a woman over, that open her heart, persistence in that. Men often think, I'll do one big thing, and that should last me for several months, and then I get married. Well, that should last the rest of my life. It doesn't work that way, but we're easily re-educated. That's the great news, is when men and women start to understand these differences, then a lot of things that don't make sense start to come into focus.
John, one of the things I've been curious about is, how did you come to be John Gray? You know, did you know when you were 5 years old, I'm going to grow up and become the world's leading relationship expert? Can you give us sort of a short version of your path?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm one of the world's leading experts, okay? Because my books have sold a lot, but I'm humbled in your presence as well. I think you're absolutely brilliant, and there's so many people who are brilliant at this, and I have been very successful at this. And continue to do so. I had no idea that I was going to do this in my life. I had no idea what I was going to do when I was a kid growing up. And in my 20s, I was teaching yoga and spirituality, and I was a monk. So I clearly had no idea that I was going to be teaching relationships
at that
time.
You were a monk? Like you took vows of celibacy?
Yeah, I did. I was celibate from age 18 to 19 to 27.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's an interesting foundation. Often when people sort of define themselves a little differently from the crowd, is they tend to be a little different. And what I have a different perspective on relationships than most people, is that particularly people that teach about relationships or therapists and so forth, is that my experience was one in my 20s, which the 20s are a very formative time where we really establish who we are and get a sense of grounding in ourselves. And I feel very fortunate. For me, we all have our own unique journey, but for me, it was learning how to be happy and fulfilled through my spiritual relationship with the higher power, and taking care of myself and feeling good within myself and feeling happy without being in an intimate relationship with a woman. Then in my around 28 years old, I started having relationships with women, and it was a different kind of relationship than most guys have, because I really wasn't looking to the woman to make me happy. I wasn't needy in any kind of a way. I was really very full within myself. And to me, the experience of romance was a kind of ecstasy that went from fullness to greatness. You know, you can be really happy and feel really good on your own, but to take it to greatness, to ecstasy, you share your fullness with someone else. So in a sense, I started out having relationships from a much more mature place, where I felt fulfilled and complete within myself and found a greater wholeness through sharing my wholeness with another. And ultimately, this is the goal in our relationships, is we don't go to each other to fill up. We go to each other to share what we have inside. And through that process of sharing and loving, we feel even more fulfilled.
What an amazing preparation for having relationships.
Exactly, exactly. And the other dynamic was, here I was at 28 years old, now starting my study in psychology to get my PhD. I'd gotten my master's degree in Eastern philosophy. And what had happened was, here I am studying psychology, and everybody is saying that men should be this way, men should be this way. This is back, you know, back in the early 80s, where there was a big movement towards men and women being the same. And as I got to know women through my counseling, I was counseling women mostly, they really seemed very different from me, and I saw nothing wrong with them. Because the great thing about the spiritual foundation is that you're non-judgmental. I'd say that was the greatest gift of all my spiritual meditations and spiritual processes, love and non-judgmentalness. And when you're able to also have a sense of yourself, that self-realization of knowing who you are and what feels right for you, when people are telling me I should be a certain way, I went, but that doesn't feel right for me. And part of what actually motivated me to start becoming a seminar leader to teach my own workshops is I came back in the late 70s to California from being in Europe, and there was all these personal growth seminars going on, and I took them. I said, my goodness, they're missing a lot of stuff here. I can do better. That's what kind of motivated me. I thought, if people like this, my goodness, they're really going to like what I have to say. Because my method is one which is about transformation, but it starts with the foundation of loving yourself just the way you are and defining yourself as you are. And what I was doing was helping women feel validated and helping men feel validated. And back in the 70s and 80s, nobody was really doing that. They were kind of like women were, to a certain extent, wanting men to change and become more feminized. And men would become frustrated with women because they didn't think the way men thought. They thought women overreacted. You know, that was maybe the earlier generation of psychology where you have Freudian analysis, which was pretty much looking at women, and every time a woman was creating trouble in a relationship, she was overreacting. Now, update this to my message, where I basically said women are not overreacting. They're designed to have stronger reactions. Somebody's got to be, you know, aware of all the little problems. Women, you know, if you're a mother and you've got children, you've got to look and see, is there an ant invasion? Whereas if you've got a man, you've got to, you know, protect against tigers and lions and bears. So now, 20 years later, we find that the fight or flight center in men and women is very, very different. For men, it's tuned into lions and tigers and bears. It only gets excited when their problems are really big. Whereas for women, their amygdala is much smaller, and it's on the other side of the brain, and the main part of it's on her right side of the brain, which is more the emotional part, and it reacts to smaller things. So what you'll see under moderate stress in psychological tests that have been done, under moderate stress, a woman's brain becomes 8 times more active than a man's, and most of that activity is increased blood flow, goes to what's called the limbic system, or the emotional part of the brain. So here she is reacting emotionally to little things. Now, if you interview her and you say, is this a big thing? She'll say, no, it's a little thing. But for a man to have that kind of a strong emotional reaction, it would have to be a big thing. So what happens in relationships today is when women have their normal reaction, men look at it and go, why are you making a big deal out of this? And she says, I'm not making a big deal out of this. And he's saying, well, if you're not making a big deal of it, why are you so emotional, A? And B, why are you talking to me about it? Why can't you just let it go and forget it? And men don't realize that by talking in a woman's brain, the limbic system is much more wired up to the talking part of the brain than a man. And this is because there's a process that when you have a strong emotional reaction, your brain then is supposed to become relaxed. It's supposed to calm. And it does that through a brain chemical called serotonin. So when there's a strong emotional reaction, the brain releases serotonin. And particularly what helps the brain or triggers the brain to release serotonin is talking. If you can talk and express what you're feeling to somebody who's compassionate and understanding, your brain releases serotonin and relaxes the limbic system. So for women to feel calm, a long story, but it helps us to make sense of each other, is if women can talk about what they're feeling, quite often they can feel better right away without having to fix or solve anything. Now, men, on the other hand, their limbic system is not that active. Their amygdala, the stress center, becomes active when there's big problems. Little problems almost doesn't create a register at all, but big problems stimulate the brain to make dopamine, which then motivates them to take action. And the fight or flight center in a man is wired up to the action part of the brain. So when there's problems, men want to do something about it. And if their partner, let's say, is emotionally charged, he thinks she's saying there's lions and tigers and bears, and so he wants to get in there and solve the problem right away and put out the fire. And that's not what she's looking for. She's looking for someone to listen and understand her. So there's a lot of miscommunication that goes on between men and women because we don't understand these basic differences. And with this new insight, it makes men better listeners. It also teaches women the importance of sharing in new and different ways, because if you just, you know, without a gender awareness, a gender intelligence, we might call it, to understand how you're going to be heard, you could say things all the time that you would unknowingly turn a man off, and vice versa, men unknowingly turn women off.
What are the biggest things that men do to women or women do to men that turn each other off?
Oh, I thought you were about to say what they were.
No,
but
I'm
what
asking
are they?
You. I can feel the listeners on the edge of their seat. You're saying that.
I know it's a big issue. I have to say that as a preface to my answer is, for years and years and years, when I wrote Men Are From Mars, and I would go to parties where there'd be single women available there, they would always come up to me, and that's their biggest question is they. You know, when they start talking for a long time about the details of a date, I can already see it coming, because they're going to say, this happened, this happened, this happened. Why didn't he call back? You know, that was then later on, a wonderful book came out called He's Just Not Into You. Because women are constantly ruminating. Their brains will go over and over and over. What did I say? What happened? What went wrong? Why didn't it work out? And first of all, we have to realize there is a foundation that you know, you could be a completely wonderful person, your soulmate is right around the corner, and you're going to live happily ever after, but here you're with the wrong person. And it's just not going to click for them, or it's not going to click for you. You can't make it click just with anybody. It's not like you can pick somebody out of the crowd and suddenly live happily ever after. There is something called compatibility. And, you know, sometimes there's just not that compatibility is there. Now, the way that shows up, it's called chemistry. It generally shows up in men differently than women, and this is important. And then I'll talk about the ways to turn off the chemistry, but let me explain a little bit about what chemistry is. And I do go in this much greater detail, not so much in Men Are From Mars book, this part, but in my book, Mars, Venus on a Date. So that's, you know, this is the big question that comes up when we're dating. So if we look at it, there's four different types of chemistry is one way of looking at it. One is physical. And that's that physical attraction. You're ready to, you know, jump into bed, basically, or you're turned on, you're excited, your body is thrilled. There's a physical chemistry there as an attraction. And there's attraction is stronger, less, whatever, the more chemistry there is. Then you've got emotional chemistry, and that's where you feel you like someone, you enjoy someone, you have fun with them, you're affectionate with them. You just, simply put, you like them. And to a certain extent, that grows until you love them. Then there's mental chemistry, which is you find someone interesting. Okay, so it's just curious. You're drawn to them. You know, I find that person interesting, someone you might admire, someone you like to get to know. How do they think? How do they feel? What's going on inside of them? That curiosity, that's another form of chemistry, that you find them interesting. And then the fourth chemistry is soul chemistry, soulmate. And that's where you, and the way I interpret this, is when you've got physical, emotional, and mental chemistry all together, you feel so aligned with someone, it helps us to open our hearts fully and experience a kind of unconditional love, which is the soul connecting with that person's soul. And the feeling generally you have at that time is, I want to share my life with this person, because that soul is the eternal part of us. It's eternal. So you get this feeling of it's, you know, you want to be with them forever, because it has that unlimited feeling that goes with it. And that's soul chemistry. And soul chemistry you could have with someone but not have any physical chemistry or emotional chemistry or mental chemistry. So these are all different types of chemistry. What you want is to find somebody who is, where you've got all four. And generally speaking, the soul chemistry opens up, the awareness of your soul connection with somebody will open after you've discovered there's physical, emotional, and mental chemistry. Now, let's say you've spent your whole life as a monk, say, and you've developed your spirituality, so you're fully connected to your soul. Then you would feel soul chemistry with many, many more people, but they wouldn't be the right person for you. And that was kind of my experience, which is as a yogi, a monk, someone who'd spent 9 years, a lot of time in meditation, a very pure life. When I started having relationships, I felt a soul chemistry with lots of women, but there weren't the other kinds of chemistry. So I still love all those women. I mean, it's like I could see who they are, and they're beautiful women. I'm kind of chuckly. It's kind of like Willie Nelson's song, "To All the Women I've Loved." that is that's soul chemistry. So you can have soul chemistry with somebody, but doesn't mean you're going to have a successful relationship here on planet Earth at this time and place. So you can love someone. And the reason I say that is you can love someone, but they could just have a different journey this lifetime. They could have a different journey. It just doesn't work out. You could find someone, there's a soul chemistry. You were together in a past life. You discovered each other. This happens to some people. They feel this connection. But this is not the life for that. This is not the time and place for that. You have to find the person who's ready for you at this time. Timing is a big part of finding the right person. For you, Ariel, it was 44 years old, and then you found the right person. And that's an inspiration for people, because sometimes women think, why so long? Well, our soul has a journey, and we have to learn certain things to prepare us. We want to do certain things first. Other people want to do other things first. So there's, you just have to keep following your heart and trust that things are going to unfold if you're authentic to yourself. And for me, it was a similar kind of a journey. Here I am, a celibate monk for 9 years, and then the irony is the woman I married to, Bonnie, for now, 26 years. Actually, when she was married before, I was helping her and taking care of her. I never met her, but she was on one of the meditation teacher training programs, and she was pregnant with her first child. And it just turned out, the karma of the situation is that she was pregnant, she needed help, and I was in charge of things there. And so I was making sure she got fed cottage cheese and made sure that she got her comfortable chair. And I never met her. She was the pregnant woman. And then several years later, she'd been divorced, and I stopped being a monk, and I happened to meet her and didn't know that, but was very attracted to her, and then gradually discovered that we'd even known each other before we knew each other, so to speak. And I was single, but I was still not ready. I was ready to, I needed to explore the whole range of soulmates, so to speak. There were lots of women I was interested in at that time. So I was with many people, and one of those people, I married this other woman. But first, I actually wanted to marry my wife, Bonnie. I wanted to marry her, and she said, you're not ready to be married. You're still, you're still sowing your wild oats, so to speak. And I really wasn't ready. I didn't have any income. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a career. And she said, you're just not ready to be married. I love you, but it's not the right time. So I left her. I went off and married someone else for a couple of years who wasn't the right person for a lifetime relationship. But she was a wonderful person. I still love her. She helped me in my career. I helped her in her career. It was more of a let's help each other period of time. Although at the time we thought we'd be together forever, but that just sort of lessened and lessened and lessened. We realized we weren't really that compatible on other levels.
Yeah, and I love what you said about timing, because it's so true. So even though I was a first-time bride at 44, that's when I was ready. Ryan and I know, had we connected a day earlier, it would have never turned out as great as it has. John, I want to segue you a little bit into talking about the five stages of dating to create a loving, lasting relationship, knowing that we've got so many singles on the line.
Okay, well, that's exactly where we're going. So I divorced the other partner, and then Bonnie and I got back together, and we're soulmates. Being a soulmate with someone doesn't mean that you don't have issues and challenges. They come up, but you have enough support, particularly if you have education, to move through it and grow deeper in love. It's always through challenges that we grow and we transform. And so it's there, but we have the, in a sense, the substance to work it through, because there is this compatibility, this chemistry on all four levels. And the way you discover and develop that chemistry on all four levels is through the five stages of dating. And with those stages of dating, There are ways we unknowingly sabotage ourselves. And this is where I'm answering your question before, which is how do we unknowingly turn off the other person? It's a little different in each of the five stages of dating. And certainly there could be other ways we do it as well. But I'm kind of looking at the most common ways that men and women unknowingly sabotage or turn off the potential of a relationship. So let's say you have a potential to be, have a, you know, a really good relationship with someone. There's ways that you can confuse it so that you don't end up feeling that chemistry. So here's the first stage, is the attraction stage, and that's where you're seeking love. One of the biggest ways that we sabotage ourselves is that when we're dating in this, we're just feeling our attraction, we're following our attractions, we're following the chemistry. The first thing is for women to follow their physical chemistry with someone is quite often a mistake.
Okay. So if we like him, that should be a red flag. If we
not if you like him. Liking him is fine. That's emotional chemistry. Admiring him or being interested in him is a real green flag. And if it's just somebody who turns you on physically, you can try it. But if he turns out to be not available, then you know. Don't listen to that. And the reason I say this, there's so many times I've counseled women who feel they feel this arousal very sudden in a relationship with a man, and then it turns out he's married, he's not available, he's dangerous, he won't make a commitment, he's just not ready. And it's almost as though women intuitively sense that here's a man who's not available to give me what I need. And if they have unresolved issues from their childhood where they didn't get what they needed from their father or from a male, or there's unresolved issues from a previous relationship with a man, quite often the way that shows up is a strong physical attraction to a person who will repeat that pattern in some way. So the way you, let's say you were completely healthy and whole, you're 44 years old, you've done all this great work on yourself like Ariel had done, then you meet a guy and you find that you find him both interesting, you like him, and you're turned on all at once, and you might jump in bed that night, who knows, and it all turns out fine. That's the exception to the rule, because you've waited, you're more mature, you're more aware of who you are. Many people dating are not aware fully of who they are, and they have wounds that they haven't really dealt with. And you don't want to deal with those wounds by just repeating the situation over and over. You can just know the symptoms. It's like you have this little Geiger counter inside that says, best person for me, not best person for me. Generally speaking, in my experience with interviewing, counseling, couples who are basically happily married, it's not always this case, but happily married couples, typically were friends first. They got to know each other. Often from the woman's point of view, her affection and her attraction on a physical level tended to grow over time. And so, you know, in many cases, a guy has to woo her, and as he's wooing her, her physical chemistry starts to increase. Or they're just friends for a while, and she feels the emotional connection, she feels a sense of safety, and she has some admiration for him. That's the mental chemistry. Then suddenly, there's a flame on. And that's what all the old songs are about. It's in the kiss. You know, the kiss happens, and you go, wow, I didn't even realize I had all these feelings for him. It's like suddenly appears. Now, for men, generally speaking, the physical chemistry is the first thing that ignites. So when a guy is with a woman, the first thing he's going to will direct him towards, who is he picking? He's seeing this person and this person and this person. The one he's going to tend to want a relationship with, to start a relationship with at least, is physical chemistry. So, you know, there's a stereotype of men who just want to have sex, which is really an illusion. It's just that the first thing that comes up for a man is he just wants to have sex. It's a physical attraction. Then what happens, and it's like flame on, and when it flames on, it's as if he loves her for a temporary period of time, and he thinks she's wonderful. But then once the physical act has been consummated, if there isn't emotional chemistry, that's where he'll notice it. If there isn't any sort of mental chemistry or soul chemistry, that's when he'll notice it. So to men, they kind of start out in a big flame, and the flame fades out as he gets to know her, unless, as he gets to know her, there is this correct emotional chemistry, mental chemistry, and soul chemistry. Then rather than the flame going out, the flame becomes not more passionate, so to speak, but it changes and it grows, it becomes richer. The only way I can describe that, and I think terms that really help men to understand this, it's after about 6 years of my marriage with Bonnie, after having sex one time, you know, and we have great sex, and it just, it's wonderful. And but when it's really, really wonderful, I always sort of interview her. It wasn't that great. If it's not so fantastic, I'll just go to sleep. But when it's really fantastic, oh, that was so wonderful. And so I said, you know, that was as good as it was in the beginning. And she had this funny look on her face, and I said, wasn't it as good for you? And she said, oh, it was better than it was in the beginning. And then I thought, well, what were you faking at the beginning? Because it sure sounded like it was good. And she said, oh, no, the sex part was great. But, you know, now we've been married 6 years. You've seen the best of me, and you've seen the worst of me, and you still adore me and love me. That's what makes sex really, really great. And that was a real maturing, awakening moment for me. And that's why I remember it, you know, it was a long time ago, is I realized, yeah, sex has changed. The love, when you know who you're making love to and you're having sex, what a profound experience that is. And that would be a very different experience from something that men can experience. When men have a one-night stand, for example, they don't know who they're having sex with. It's all a fantasy. It's all a complete fantasy. And quite often when a woman is having a one-night stand, it's a complete fantasy as well, because you don't really know who the person is. And so there's two aspects of it. There's the aspect of you don't know who you are yet. That's a young person having sex. And they define themselves by the fulfillment of the other person. So that's an illusory type of drug-like sex. And another kind of sex is where you don't know the person you're having sex with. There's no real intimacy there, but there is a massive amount of a brain chemical called dopamine. And dopamine is what's produced by cocaine. Dopamine is also produced when we fall in love with someone. That's there too. So it can be, you know, that falling in love stage where you don't know the person, or you're having sex with someone and you don't know them. There's a very high level of dopamine, and the dopamine creates a kind of a drug-like experience. So a guy could go from one woman to another woman to another woman, and that drug-like experience, the dopamine, is because there's newness. You know, why is it that when we go on vacations and we go somewhere new, we get so excited, it's so interesting? It's because it's newness stimulates dopamine. If you listen to a record, a song the first time, I make a point of listening to the radio and going, oh, I've never heard that song before. It always has that excitement to it. But once you've heard a song 50 times, and if you heard it 50 times in a row, sometimes you never want to listen to the song again. Fortunately, people aren't records. We do change, and there is a newness. But that's what we have to realize, is we can't expect sex to have the same quality that it has the first time, if the first time was really great, every time. Because the newness goes away. But then the other levels of chemistry can come in to balance it out. I mean, just to feel that soul connection, that spiritual fulfillment, the ecstasy of two souls uniting and pure love of becoming one. That's really magnificent. And you find someone like that, and you don't expect it to happen that way every time either. You'd be realistic about this. So in the dating stage, now we're coming back to stages of dating. What we want to do, some of the obstacles that are in front of us, if we don't know how to recognize them, is that for women, you could be with the perfect person, your soulmate could be right there, and you would not feel that much physical chemistry, but you would find them interesting, you'd like them, you'd want to be friends with them, but you don't want to just jump into bed. That is often a sign of the growing chemistry and good chemistry. For men, they generally need to feel that physical chemistry right away. And you don't have to tell men this. They already know that. But what they need to know is the second stage. But one other challenge in the first stage of dating, which is very, very important, which is just in terms of psychological. This is not chemistry. This is just the approach of dating. The first stage, you're looking for a partner. You're looking for someone. Don't look for your soulmate. Never look for your soulmate. You know, always in the background, you could have the intention, I want to find a soulmate, or I want to get married. Whatever your intention is, that's fine as a background. But don't be going out on a date thinking, is this my soulmate, is this not my soulmate? It will emerge. The awareness of the right person will gradually show up. The best approach I found in recommending to people, and the one I followed as well, finding my soulmate, is don't look for your soulmate, but look to have positive experiences. Create positive experience. Create a series of positive dates. When you have, this goes along with the secret, which is that the power of attraction, is when you create a series of positive experiences, then you're anticipating each date another positive experience. Then you start creating a receptivity to actually attract the right person for you, or when you're with the right person, to recognize them and see that this is the right person for me. That's the whole key to it, is a series of positive dating experiences. If you're looking for your soulmate, and every time the person doesn't measure up, then you kind of feel like, well, that was a failure, that was a waste of time, that was a loser date, instead of how did I have fun on that date, how did I enjoy being on that date. So that's the key, is create a series of positive dating experiences. If you were to come to my house as a guest, you look at my house and you'd be blown away. It's so beautiful, and there's art, and there's arrangement, it's orderly, it's organized, it's comfortable, beautiful views and so forth. But if you came to my house and you were thinking of buying it, you'd see some of that good stuff. But then you start looking under the house, you look at the foundation, you look at the cracks, you notice all kinds of problems that exist in the house as well. So that's it's just, what is our expectation? If your expectation is to buy something or own it for life, you're going to be a lot more critical. Your judgmental side will tend to come up. So give yourself a rest and let yourself enjoy the dating process. So that's stage one. Okay, then once you are dating someone for a while, you start thinking, gee, maybe this is someone I want to be, you know, committed to, a monogamous relationship. This person has potential, or, you know, I'm going to start saying no and stop looking around. This person I want to settle into and go on many dates with and not be open to other dates. So as you start moving towards what we'll call a committed relationship or a monogamous relationship, you're moving towards that where you're not going to be dating anybody else. That first step, that's where you step out of stage one to stage two. And what then emerges as you get closer in that way is doubts. Doubting is perfectly normal. What people have to know is that you could be with the perfect person for you, and generally speaking, you will have doubts coming up. It's not as though you think, gee, this is my soulmate, and there's no doubt at all. That day does come, but that's a later stage. That's when you're ready to get married and create, if that's the way you want it, if you want to get married, then that's when you feel like, gee, this is the right person. But even still, some doubts can come up then, but only because you didn't really explore those doubts in the second stage. They'll recur again and again if you skip this stage. It's perfectly normal to go through doubts and to know the symptoms of doubting. The first thing is not to assume that if you find the right person, there'll be no doubts. What I'm turning that around and saying, if you find the right person, there certainly will be doubts. That uncertainty will come up. And the way uncertainty shows up in men and women is often quite different. For men, the uncertainty shows up as not even so much an intellectual questioning. It just shows up as a lack of sexual desire. Remember, men are bonding on a sexual level first, you know, on a physical level. So what happened for a guy is he has this strong physical attraction. Then, for no reason at all, or it could be something she says or does, and we'll get to that. But for no reason at all, let's say she does everything perfectly. It's a wonderful date. It's several wonderful dates. This particularly shows up when he's overly like interested in her, and this is the one. He's very excited, and he's wanting to spend a lot of time with her. Then, boom, he doesn't call at all. What is going on there? Or you just have a really passionate evening. It's the connection. Whenever men connect a lot with a woman, oxytocin gets produced. That's the bonding hormone. Oxytocin lowers testosterone. To rebuild his testosterone, he needs to pull away. He literally needs to stop thinking about you, spending time with you, and at that time, he has no interest in having sex with you. And this is kind of shocking for him, particularly the younger the man, it's more shocking. And suddenly, you know, he's like all turned on to you all the time, and now he's not. He thinks, oh, something's wrong. And what at that point, he needs to pull away, but not think that something's wrong. If he thinks something's wrong, what he goes is, I guess I'm not that into her. Then what happens is the grass on the other side of the fence always looks greener. This is the point, whenever you're in the place of uncertainty and doubt, when a man's needing to pull away, that's when the grass on the other side of the fence becomes very, very pretty, very, very nice. Let me try wandering over there and see what the grass tastes like over there. that's the time I say to men, is that, you know, you can look on the other side of the fence, but this is a time not to focus on trying to find your fulfillment through a woman. There's many other ways you find fulfillment in your life other than through a woman. So you've just sort of connected with her, things are really good, now you've lost interest in her physically. You may care about her, you're interested in her, but you just don't have that physical charge. Then other women are starting to look more interesting. Do not pursue other women at that time. This is a time to pursue other activities in your life that are fulfilling, and don't question whether this woman is right for you at this moment. Just know that there's a rhythm, like the waves, the high tide and the low tide, the high tide and the low tide. It's a natural rhythm. And if he's able to not jump the fence and be with another woman, then he gets to experience the low tide turns into the high tide again, and his sexual attraction comes back. This is why it's wise for women. Even though a man is really wanting to spend a lot of time with you, don't spend a lot of time with him. Give him a chance to miss you. Give him a chance to be with you, and then give him a chance to miss you. You're just too busy. And at those times when he pulls away, or when you sense he's pulling away, this is the mistake women always make, and they make it consistently. They sense him pulling away, and that's when they pop the big question. You know, where are we going in this relationship? What are you feeling? I feel something's happened. What's wrong? What's the matter? What did I say? What did I do? Do you care about me? Do you love me? Do you want to be with me? Is there somebody else? All those kind of questions is a big mistake, a big turnoff to a man.
Worst timing in the world, right?
It's the worst timing in the world. And, you know, when I explain that to women, I say, if you want to ask about the relationship, you know, the big question that men hate, which is, let's talk about our relationship. Men hate that one. So when you go into, let's talk about our relationship, it's generally at those times when her uncertainty is coming up, but her doubts as a general thing, there can be exceptions, of course. Her doubts at that point are, instead of, do I want to be with him, at that point her doubts are, does he want to be with me? So that's when he's pulling away. When he starts to pull away, instead of her doubting, gee, is this the right guy for me, she doubts, gee, does he want to be with me? And certainly there's a feeling there, well, if he doesn't want to be with me, I don't want to be with him. However, the big questioning is she wants to get information from him. And this is really the time when she needs to look deeper inside herself and find fulfillment in other parts of her life. So you don't just jump in and glom on and glue to each other, even though it feels so good. It's like a drug. I mean, it's like one dessert that's unbelievably good. You want another one and another one. Well, you sabotage your relationship by rushing it, by pushing too fast in this way. If you can just go a little slower, you can ensure that this bonding happens appropriately, where he gets to pull away a little bit and gets engaged in other activities, gets distracted, so to speak, and then now he misses her and comes back, and then he has time to be alone. It's the same thing for her, so she doesn't get needy, which women will tend to do. And actually, it's the most independent women that once they start having sex with a guy, sometimes they get very needy after they're sort of like having sex with him. It's like the rules suddenly change, and she wants to know where he is, and when's he supposed to call, and what's he supposed to do, and suddenly there's all these expectations she has, which can be a huge, huge turnoff to him. And it's because all those expectations are wanting him to be closer to her, and what he needs at that time is to have his sort of independence, his freedom to come and go. And as he comes and goes, every time he comes, he literally starts bonding more and more, as long as he has room to go. So it's like a rubber band, is what I talk about in the book Men Are From Mars, is men get close, then they pull away, like stretching a rubber band back, but they'll spring back, and you stretch it back, and they spring back. And every time they spring back on their own, without her pursuing him, doing anything to pursue him at that time, he has stronger stretch, and he bonds more. So he gains the ability to know that I have the power to make her happy, and that I come to her. And what women don't realize is the way they sabotage in the first two stages, the first one or the second one, is if you're giving him more than you're getting. Matter of fact, even in the next stage, whenever you give a man more than you're getting, you unknowingly sabotage the relationship. Let's say you're on a date, and at any stage, and you heard your mother tell you, you know, if you want someone to be interested in you, be interested in them. Well, that's a really sweet little thing that women do, and it's the way they sabotage their success. Because if you're more interested in a man than he's interested in you, he just becomes more interested in himself. So show a man a lot of interest, ask him lots of questions, be interested in him, try to please him, you know, and suddenly he goes, oh, this is great, I like this, it feels good. Then suddenly he falls more in love with himself and he doesn't know you at all. Men grow. This is what women have to understand. We're very, very different. We grow in our affection. We grow in our bonding by feeling successful in fulfilling you. It's the, you know, the more simplistic version of that statement is men need a challenge. And this is a reality. Challenge stimulates the brain chemical dopamine that allows his testosterone levels to increase. If you make it easy for a man, meaning you're doing everything. Now, you can help him to be successful. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, if he's a shy guy, you know, you go and you stand next to him, you smile at him, you curl your hair, he still doesn't get the message. You basically have to say, would you like to come have lunch with me? I'll make you a salad, you know, something. You know, some guys are just shy, and you have to, you know, pursue. But you have to do it delicately so that you keep giving him chances to do things for you. Oh, let's go spend some time together. But even better, give a man a problem to solve. You know, the whole bonding for men happens when they do things for you. To do this, you know, example is, you know, for Bonnie, you know, she basically, when I was bonding with her, you know, she said, oh, I need to get groceries for dinner. Would you go and get these groceries for me? Sure. Gave me a list that I went and got groceries for her. Then I got to her house, you know, the heat went out, you know, the hot water went out. Would you fix my hot water? And I go down there, and I don't know how to do it either. I've been a monk for 9 years. So, but I read the instructions. I went through the process, and I did it. And she's like, oh, great. I didn't know what to do. But, you know, I'm not saying women to fake it, but she didn't know what to do. You find areas in your life where you need something. Men have to feel they're needed, that you have a job for him to do, and he does it, and it makes a difference in your life. It's that smile. It's that response that you naturally give to him that helps him to bond with you. So anyway, that's the, I'm going to have to, I know our time is limited. I'm going to zoom through those last few. But once we get to, the uncertainties start going away as we just keep cycling. And the cycle is he pulls away. At that time, she doesn't run after him, but instead she finds fulfillment, goes back to her life to find more fulfillment. Then he comes back and they sort of do this little dance. And gradually as they get to know each other, if it's destined, if they have the right compatibility and so forth, they will grow in love. Otherwise, they will grow apart. But if you're growing together, then you'll move into stage three where you want a commitment. And the big thing is, and he wants to be committed. He doesn't want to see anybody else. And women, do not assume that you're in a committed relationship with a man unless he says it. Because quite often, women will feel like, gee, we're having such a great time. We've loved each other. We have love. We make love with each other. We say we love each other. She assumes that he must be monogamous. And men are not monogamous until they say they're going to be monogamous. Women will tend to become automatically monogamous when they feel they love someone and they're having sex with someone. So if you feel love and sex for a guy and he's loving you and having sex with you, do not assume that he's a monogamous until he says he is. So you have to have those conversations. And, you know, that's a big subject. But the big key in stage three commitment is once you're in this committed relationship, every man kind of feels like, okay, now we're in a committed relationship. The search is over. The hunt is over. His dopamine levels start to drop and he becomes passive. And what women do, they notice that at that time and they sort of pick up the ball and run with it. They start planning things, organizing things. They start giving more, until they start resenting him. And then when they resent him because they feel he's not doing enough, then he will resent her and lose interest in her, or she will lose interest in him because she's giving more than she's getting. And this can be reversed by women realizing, don't give more than you're getting. But then she says, but he's so passive. How do I get him to do more? Don't give more to get more. Give less. Now, give less doesn't mean reject him. It means don't do so much for him. Instead, feel more for him. You can always feel love for someone, but don't do for him. And ask him to do more things for you. Don't let it get comfortable. If you like that he would take you out on dates, now you're on stage three, he says, yeah, let's just sit around and watch TV tonight. You know, he gets passive. You can do that some nights, but then on other nights you say a week in advance, oh, this is happening. Would you get tickets and take me? You have to take the higher road here of keeping the relationship active because men tend to go into passive mode. The fourth mode is intimacy. It's at this stage where you feel like the relationship is your monogamous relationship. It's an equal give and take. It's only once you've gotten to the equal give and take in a monogamous relationship where you can really experience true intimacy. And this I mean emotional intimacy, where you share anything that you're feeling inside. Do not have big fights and arguments until you know there's an equalness of success in the relationship and you're in a committed relationship. Don't bring up emotional issues. Don't criticize. Don't give up negativity. There's a place in every relationship where you need to be authentic, but you should only be fully authentic, and that's intimacy. Only be fully authentic once you've sort of put your best out there and it's been received. Once you've been able to bring out the best in him and he's brought out the best in you, that's when you start sharing more deeply. That's when you sort of get naked emotionally, so to speak, where you can let your guard down. If you just say whatever you feel and think in the earlier stages of a relationship, it's a big, big turnoff. For example, one woman I counseled once, she says, "I want to speak my mind no matter what. I want to say whatever I feel. That's the kind of man I want." And I go, "Great, that's great. Once you're at a later stage, that's when you're picking the fruit off of the tree that took a long time to grow. You don't pick the fruit off of the tree, you know, nip it in the bud. That doesn't work. You've got to let it grow and develop. Then you can pick it when it's ripe. There's a time to experience full intimacy, and it's not right away. Now, for some women, women are different. Some women are more physical. Some women are more emotional. Some women are more spiritual. We all have differences. There's not better or worse. For some people, for some women, being physically intimate right away in a relationship is just too much. And for other women, it's fun. It's not a problem. So it's not to judge yourself if you're not into having sex right away, because so many people today just jump right into bed and whatever. But if you want to take longer, you can take all the way to stage 4, where this is the time for you when to be physically intimate, it takes time to get there. For other people, it's getting emotionally intimate, it takes time to get there. For other people, you know, it's to share their thoughts and their dreams and the depths of who they are. So to a certain extent, till you get to the fourth stage, you're still, in a sense, you know, you've got a new job. Think of it like a job interview. In a job interview, you don't, you know, share all your faults. You don't share all your limitations. Basically, the standard message is this. In a job interview, they always say, what are your greatest strengths? You talk wonderfully about yourself. And what are your faults? The typical fault is I give too much. I work too hard. I'm too generous. You don't reveal any problems with yourself. So you really want to put on your best behavior and sense your best outfit until you really can see that the best part of you is fully seen and appreciated and acknowledged by your partner. Then the balance can come forth. But you don't expect someone to see your weaker self, your more challenged self, the dark side of you, so to speak, until they've at least seen the bright side of you. And that gives you a foundation to bring out the best. And once you have intimacy, then you have engagement. What happens with this next stage of dating, the fifth stage, is engagement is you wake up one morning and you realize, this is my soulmate. This is someone I want to share my life with. How do you know is always the question people come. How do I know the person is my soulmate? And it's as when you know, you know. It's as clear as if you give me a glass of cool, refreshing water and I drink it, I go, that was cool, refreshing water. Nobody can tell me what cool is. It's just it's temperature. I know it. It's right there. And that knowingness is very, very important. It takes a while. It's like a tree growing a fruit. It comes at a time of its own. It comes, it arrives, and you pick it in that moment, and you know it. And that's a very important, delicate state of being that can be lost very easily. But you want to maintain that knowingness because it will carry you through storms in the future, knowing that everything's going to be all right, knowing that you're with the right person. And if you can nurture that moment, which is you know it, you celebrate that moment with the engagement, but you don't test it by running to Vegas and getting married right away and now having to live together and make decisions together and just suddenly your lives are glued together completely. I recommend, not that it's written in stone, but don't be in a hurry once you have that moment of engagement where you go, this is my soulmate, I want to share my life with you, I want to marry you, will you marry me? And she says, yes, I want to marry you. That moment, that's when you're now engaged. Then you get to live together as if you're married, but you're not yet really married with all the heavy responsibilities that come along with marriage, making decisions together. It's a challenging thing. You want a foundation of once again, a series of very positive experiences together. And in a sense, that's why we had the honeymoon, which is the period of time where couples, once they've committed, would then go off without the pressures of daily life to enjoy each other, the fruits of their love. Well, you can have a nine-month engagement, and you can do that through the whole time, the whole joy of we're going to get married, we're as if married, we get to enjoy all the things, the feelings of marriage, but without all the responsibilities. That memory of that time, that experience, is literally like going to the gym and building up all these love muscles. It's a foundation to remember for the rest of your life. It's a knowingness that it's like a putting a cast on it, helping it grow stronger at that moment. Then the rest of your life, you can go back to that moment and remember what you knew and bring back those feelings. And then you get married. And the whole point of marriage is to acknowledge that knowingness in front of others, A, and B, is make a commitment, make a promise. And you make vows. And when you make those vows, then later in life, when the storms of stress come about us, we disconnect from that place where we know who our soulmate is, because we're disconnected to our own soul at those times. At those times, if we follow our vows, whether you feel like it or not, you do what you say you're going to do. You commit yourself to feeling those feelings that you had at that time. Just by taking action consistent with those kind of feelings, it brings back those feelings that you had on that day. That's the point of making a commitment. If listening to this talk today, you're committed to hearing all of the speakers in this series, which I suggest you do. Just notice how you're feeling inside, how knowledge inspires you and motivates you. You feel like, okay, what am I committed to right now in this moment when your heart is open, when you're feeling inspired? Make a commitment. And when you make that commitment, then when you lose touch with the authenticity that you're feeling right now, the inspiration that you're feeling right now, when you lose that, if you remember your commitment you made at that time, then by following that commitment, you bring yourself back to that moment where your heart was open. And that's how we realign ourselves, as always. And that's the point of wearing that ring, which is symbolic of the commitment you made for the marriage, is that when you follow your vows, it always brings you back to that moment. And that moment can grow. It integrates into present time. And instead of growing distant, you grow together in love.
Wow, that's so great.
Wow, John, that's just so clear and so helpful.
Well, thank you. It's such a joy to talk to both of you. You're both amazing experts in this field. There's so much to learn and to talk about and so forth. And I think that we all just need to be reminded again and again, of what works, And not everything works for every single person. We're all unique and different. But just speaking the truth of what works and what has worked always helps us find the truth within ourselves, rather than interacting with people out there in the world who are always like, what doesn't work, you get depressed, you get distracted, your values get compromised, rather than coming back to standing true for who you are and making your dreams come true.
Thank you so much. And I'm wondering if you might share with us what you're most excited about these days, what you're working on, and where people can go to connect with you and find out more about your work.
Oh, well, for me, I'm thrilled. I'm very excited about, besides teaching my Mars-Venus message, which you can see I'm still very passionate about, but for me, the passion grows as I integrate more things with it. And to me, I look at the crisis today of feeling people not sleeping well, people feeling anxious, people feeling depressed, people having ADD symptoms, and lack of interest. ADD turns into lack of commitment, and which is low dopamine, and the often depression or lack of happiness in women today, high stress levels in women, is a inability to manufacture enough serotonin. So there's a kind of a crisis today of high stress levels for women, high depression levels for women, inability to sleep and so forth. And what I found is that they're often depleted in basic minerals. So I've taken the road of balancing my knowledge of psychology and behavior and relationships with the importance of good nutrition. So at my website, I have lots of little videos and so forth, which recommend different products that you can get on the internet that help tremendously. Like, some of my friends are famous seminar leaders, and yet you'll find that, my neighbors, they were both going to spend a lot of money going to a doctor to help their depression. And I said, just try this little tiny pill. Now, see, here are people who are living their lives wonderfully. They're brilliant people, yet they're depressed, and one was anxious. And what's that about? It's about what happens today is if you were to eat a head of lettuce today, it has, if you compare the amount of minerals in that lettuce to minerals to lettuce 20 years ago, UCLA did this study, you'd have to eat 5 heads of lettuce today to get the minerals you could get just 20 years ago. I mean, it's shocking, the amount of nutritional deficiency in our food today. And it's so simple just to get a mineral supplement. And minerals activate the enzymes to make the brain chemicals. And if you don't have the minerals, you can't make the brain chemicals to feel good. And if you're doing all the right things, but if you still can't manufacture the brain chemicals, you don't feel really good. You end up with all these, you know, other unwanted symptoms that certainly get in the way of feeling motivated and being our best selves in our relationships. So for me, one of them is a product I have, which is called Super Minerals for Women. Another one's called Vital Elements, which is minerals for women or minerals for men. These are incredibly helpful to anybody experiencing any of the symptoms I was just talking about before. I talk about superfoods as women are going into menopause for many of them. You know, just taking maca, for example, the menopausal symptoms can sometimes go away right away. Depression symptoms with goji berries, with the right minerals. For weight gain, that lots of women want to be their ideal weight and so forth. Goji berries, things to help the metabolism. Iodine supplement to help the thyroid gland function healthy again. There's so many simple things that quite often can create results in a couple of weeks that just are amazing. I mean, I just love helping people in this way. So I've complemented all my behavioral information with nutritional information, which can help a lot of the common symptoms of stress that we experience today. And all those things are available at my website, marsvenus.com.
Thank you so much. And any final words for our listeners, you know, some of whom might have doubts about whether it's really possible for them to create this kind of committed partnership? You've worked with so many people for so many years, and I'd love to just invite you to share final thoughts on that.
Well, final thoughts on that are, I'm just thinking, you asked me the question, what am I doing? I know that people, as participating in this program, they have the 8 stages of passion that I talk about in one of my programs, and that's a free gift to everyone. And I wanted to expand that free gift as well, since I did talk about my nutritional products. If people who are listening to this program would like to receive a discount off those products, which are already quite discounted over the whole internet, they can get 20% off by just using a special code that I've forgotten.
We'll make sure everyone gets it.
You'll make sure everybody gets that code. Yeah. But it's at the MarsVenus.com store. So having said that, I just want everybody to know, because often you go, well, do I want to try this? Well, a little discount can help motivate.
Okay, so we have got the access code here. To access the 20% discount that John is referring to, you can just visit the store at MarsVenus.com. That's MarsVenus.com, and enter the special code Soulmate20. That's Soulmate number 2020, and you will receive 20% off the products that John has just mentioned.
Now, on the other side of this, you asked a very beautiful question. I'd like to share it because I talk to so many single people, and I talk to so many happily married couples as well. And I hear the stories like Ariel's, which is, I just didn't know if I'd ever going to find the right person, and I just kind of gave up and decided I was going to be happy. And then suddenly it happened. They met someone, and it just unfolded. And it's a really fun thing that I do with couples all the time is, how did you meet? How did you meet? And you hear these amazing stories, and rarely were people actually looking like on the hunt for the right person. It was just they happened to meet, and something clicked, and something happened. And if you believe in destiny, of any kind of destiny, the one thing that is destined is that we are to find the right person for us. And if you continue to sabotage that, they somehow the right person keeps coming back, or they come back in another form. So there's never a chance, there's never a time when we can't find that love, unless it's not the right time. And the right time is when we're ready. And for each of us, that readiness happens at a different time. And for many of us, we've had that time as we get older. Some of us, our spouses have died. There's another one waiting. And that part of our purpose in this world is to love ourselves, love our lives, and to share that love with someone very special. And we all have that opportunity. We just have to open our hearts, listen, feel. And if there's a longing for that, it will be fulfilled, but sometimes not according to when we think it should. And so as we don't have that, What we can do is look at those stages of dating that I talked about and create opportunities for that to happen. Not that you're making it happen. Create opportunities. And one of the ways to create opportunities for that happen is to continue to be open to finding someone, and more importantly, be open to having someone find you by creating opportunities to have positive dating experiences, positive relationships, and not sort of separating yourself from the world.
Thank you so much, John. This has been just wonderful.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be a part of your program, and I encourage everyone to listen to all these speakers because they all have something to offer.
Thanks, John. It's been great having you.
Thank you for listening to the Ultimate Soulmate Summit, brought to you by The Soulmate Secret and the Calling in the One online course. For more information about how you can download the audios in this series or order the CD set and companion workbook, please visit soulmateaudios.com. Again, that's soulmateaudios.com. On behalf of Arielle Ford, Claire Zammit, and our event partners, we want to thank you again for participating in this series and send you much love and support on your journey to manifesting your soulmate.